Africa DJ. DJ Africa,
Africa DJ.
DJ Africa DJ. Ewo Juru, Oru, Ewo Juru. DJ Africa DJ. DJ Africa,
Africa
DJ. DJ Africa DJ. Ewo Juru.
Wake up,
Africa,
wake up,
wake up,
band from Rhythm Time, and they have a concert tonight and tomorrow. Tonight at the Dance Palace Community and Cultural Center in Port Reyes Station, 5503 B Street, Port Reyes Station. The doors open at 7. The show starts at 8 o'clock. It's for all ages. And you can get tickets at Brown Paper Tickets. And for contact information, you can call 510-343-1895. And this wonderful concert is going to feature Val Surratt, who was on the air a couple of weeks ago talking about Rhythm Time, and Sikaru Adepoju, Dazon Claiborne, Saminu Adepoju, Joel Smith, and Peter Fuji. So it's going to be just like a phenomenal evening of fabulous drummers and percussionists with featured vocalists. And again, if you don't get enough, on Saturday, December 14th, at Jerry Knight's Historic River Theater in Guerneville, 16135 Main Street in Guerneville. The doors open at 8 and the show is at 9 this time. And this one here is a 21 and over, and it's $10 cover, and the contact number is the same. And there's going to be food by Guava, the Caribbean food company, on both nights, so it's going to really be fantastic. And this tonight is the beginning of Nicole Clay Moon's House of Matter, featuring live music and special guests. And we're going to have them on the air in a minute to talk about their about what's going to be happening this weekend. So it's tonight, Friday night, Saturday, and Sunday at the ODC Theater in San Francisco. And we had tickets to give away, but nobody seemed to want them. So I'm going to tell Nicole, well, you know, thanks for the offer, but I wasn't able to give them away. It's going to be simply fantastic. And there's probably a few other things happening this weekend. The African-American Shakespeare Company's production of Cinderella continues Saturday and Sunday at the Barrio Calais Theater in the African American Art and Culture Complex in San Francisco, 762 Fulton Street. And what else is happening? There is another concert happening tonight, but I didn't get an email on that, so I'm not exactly certain. And then, of course, we have the wonderful story of Harriet Tubman that's going to be having another, it's going to be being performed again. Let me see if I can find those details. Go Tell It. And I'm not certain. I don't think it's this weekend, but I'm not certain. Let me look really quickly and tell you when it's happening. Yeah, it's a whole new show. Of course, at its core, it's the same. Oh, no, it's next weekend. So it's next weekend, the 21st and the 22nd, which is Saturday and Sunday, 3 and 7. And the Sunday show, I believe, is just 3 o'clock at the Malanga Cascalord Center for the Arts, which is 1428 Alice Street in near downtown Oakland. And that should be really fantastic. So I'm going to play the interview with the co-director of Sweet Dreams, the wonderful film about the all-women's drumming troupe out of Rwanda, who opened up a ice cream shop, which is, you know, simply fantastic and quite innovative and different. And they had a wonderful opening weekend, and so wonderful that the film has been held over. So if you missed it, you can still catch it in San Francisco at the Opera Plaza and in the East Bay at Shattuck Cinemas and in San Rafael or Mill Valley at the Rafael Theater in San Rafael. So without further ado, here is the interview with the co-director of Sweet Dreams. That's going to be first, and that's going to be followed by an interview with Nicole Clay Moon. And I'm trying to think of the name of, because he's actually the co-writer of the of House of Matter, and I am drawing a blank right now. So I'm going to just get started because I don't want to talk away all the time here. Let's see. Let me tell you in a minute who's going to be on the air with us. Let's see, Nicole. Here we go. Just a second. Alrighty. Yeah. Embodiment Project presents House of Matter at ODC Theater, 3153 17th Street. It's a really nice theater. And it's going to feature live music by Valerie Trout and her nine-piece band, Moon Candy. Oh, also wanted to mention, I'm glad I'm still chatting here, that the Ritual Theater, a tribute to Olokun, the Orisha of the Deep, Deep Water, is tomorrow as well. And I'll get you the details on that, too. Maybe I'll just play another song. That might be a good idea. Let me see. Where in the heck is looking for the other? Oh, here he is, Sabela. Yeah, Sabela was on, and he was fantastic. And I was hoping he'd send me some music because he's also a musician and a writer, but he didn't. So you'll have to just attend the event, and I'm going to play another song from Val, and then let's see, Val's around. Okay, I'm going to play another short song from Val Sarant. It's a short one. Azidaniwa, which is nice.
Yalla bobe, for the military, hey. Oh, now that you are fighting, that's the weekend.
Hear more of that, you need to get out to Rhythm Time at the Point Reyes station tonight, or out to the other venue tomorrow. Both of them are going to be simply fantastic. Sophia University Public Programs presents the Sea Celebration, a ritual theater performance in honor of Olokun, owner of the deep. And it's tomorrow, December 14th, Sophia University Auditorium, 1069 East Metal Circle in Palo Alto, California. The doors open at 6:15, and the marketplace is all the evening. But the performance is from 7 to 9. The performance is from 7 to 9. So celebrate the mystery and history of the great ocean that surrounds our planet and informs our dreams. Enter the Castle of Olokun, where you will become liquid bodies dancing with mermaids to the rhythm of the tides. The songs of the sirens will lull you to sleep, to dream through winter under the light of the moon. Engage in multicultural, multimedia rituals blending scientific fact with wild stories told with music, myth, song, and dance from the cultures of Africa, Brazil, Cuba, and the Americas. Women, men, and children of all ages are encouraged to come dressed as a creature from the sea and bring strong small instruments to make celebratory noises. 7% of the proceeds from this event will go to ocean conservation research, and you can visit ocr.org. Ocean conservation research is focused on understanding the scope of and exploring solutions to the growing problem of human-generated noise pollution and its impact on marine animals. I'm sure you've heard of that. It's really, really horrible. Particularly the ships in the Navy, this horrible noise, and it bursts the ear drums of the sea animals, particularly the dolphins and the whales. Ticket prices are denominations of 7 in honor of the ocean goddess Olokun. I got it in two different spellings, Olokun and Olokun. Not exactly certain which is correct. The student ticket price is $7, and general tickets are $14. And no one is turned away for lack of funds, but will be asked to donate in the denomination of the number 7. So you can purchase tickets at tinyurl.com/celebration. And for information, you can visit events@sophia.edu. So that's going to be really fantastic. So we just have a week of just full of wonderful, wonderful events happening. And so you can't go wrong. So we're going to play now the interview with the director of Sweet Dreams, followed by an interview with Nicole Claymoon, and trying to remember how to pronounce the brother's name. Well, hopefully you were tuned in and you heard me, because I'm not going to ruin his name and I'm not going to play any more music because I want to get started, because the whole show, the pre-recorded one, this was our first broadcast on December 4th, a couple of weeks ago. It's about 2 hours. So here we go. Enjoy.
Africa, you with black face, summer's just begun in the blazing sun, laughter, song, and fun you play. Africa, Won't you stay with me? Maybe with our love, babies born today, with your spirit fly. Is on the way, and you won't have to stay.
Was Dwight Tribble, Little Africa. Good morning. Welcome to Wanda's Picks, a Black arts and culture program of the African Sisters Media Network. And we are so pleased to have on the air today an interview with director Lisa Fruchtman, who is co-director of the wonderful award-winning film Sweet Dreams, which is opening in the San Francisco Bay Area Friday, December 6th. And it's really a wonderful treat is that some of the members of Ngoma Nshaya, which is Rwanda's first and only all-women's drumming troupe, are actually touring with the film. And Kiki, who is the leader of the troupe, the founder of the troupe, also playwright and director of the group, as well as the person who invited two young American entrepreneurs, Jeannie Dundas and Alexis Meeson of Brooklyn's Blue Marble Ice Cream Shop to Rwanda to help the women open the first ever ice cream shop there in Rwanda, and it's doing very well. And so at opening weekends, of course, there are, you know, all the wonderful people who are responsible for the film are, you know, if at all possible, you know, are in town. And so Kiki's in town from Rwanda, members of the drumming troupe in town, Lisa Fruchtman, who is actually lives in Berkeley, and co-director, she's an award-winning editor, who has worked in both feature film and television, and this is her first feature film as director. She's in town because she lives in Berkeley. Her brother is coming, flying in from New York, and he's also an award-winning director, producer, and editor of documentaries and television programs, and won lots of awards. And so he's coming into town, and this is going to be really fabulous. So the first stop on the tour, opening weekend, is Opera Plaza Theater in San Francisco on Van Ness. And then on Saturday there are two screenings where the, you know, the drumming troupe and Kiki and the directors are going to be in town, I mean, going to be there at the screenings. And that's at the Clay Theater, also in San Francisco. That's a matinee, I think 1:30. And then Saturday evening in Berkeley at Shattuck Cinemas, an encore, you know, opening, you know, performance. And then on Sunday at the Raphael in San Rafael, there's going to be a screening in the evening, and everyone's going to be there at the screening. So this is going to be a really wonderful weekend to catch everybody. And then the film, you know, continues, of course. So you can go to the website, Sweet Dreams, the film, and get all the information about the film. You can watch a clip and all that. So that's really going to be fun. So I'm going to play the interview with Lisa. And then we're going to have Nicole Clay Moon pop into the studio about about 7 o'clock this morning, Pacific time, and talk about House of Matter in its new incarnation. And that's opening this weekend at ODC Theater, and I hadn't been there. I had known that they had opened the old spot again. It's really nice there. The theater is fabulous. So House of Matter, if you caught it at Dance Mission maybe two seasons ago, was really fabulous. And so she's got some special guests. And I'm not certain exactly who's joining us in the studio, but some of her longtime collaborators are going to be joining her. Moon Candy, the ensemble, is going to be performing under the direction of Valerie Trout. And then she's got a spoken word artist coming up from Southern California. So that should be fun. So they're going to be just hopping into the studio. And I'm not certain exactly what I'm going to play after the interview, the pre-recorded interview with Lisa. So you'll just have to tune in and see, because I'm not quite certain. I was thinking about maybe playing interview with Dwight Tribble, but I'm not certain yet, because I had a really great interview with Julie Jean Jordan, who's in town from Zimbabwe, talking about Mother of Peace, and I'm thinking I might play an excerpt from that, but if I keep on talking, I'm not going to be able to play anything except music, because I'm talking through Lisa's interview time. So anyway, so here we go, Lisa Fruchtman talking about Sweet Dreams, which is opening again this weekend in San Francisco Bay Area theaters.
Yeah, I don't remember when I saw your film. I just know that I just loved it. Yeah, and I didn't even know that sweet also was sweet, you know, to taste. I just like the idea of being able to sleep well, you know?
Yeah, really. Well, you probably saw it at the Mill Valley Film Festival where we showed it a year ago, October.
I didn't know it was a while back. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. We did about a year of festivals,
mm-hmm.
and we had wonderful responses around the country and around the world,
mm-hmm.
and really far-reaching around the world, and now we're going to be opening the film theatrically, so it's
mm-hmm.
really exciting for us.
Yeah, congratulations. And you're a Bay Area filmmaking team, you and your brother.
Yeah, well, my brother now lives in New York, but
mm-hmm.
he got his filmmaking chops here. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so are you all twins or something? Like this?
No, we're not twins. He's my baby brother, and we never did anything before together, so it was a bit of a risk, but, you know.
Oh, my goodness, seriously?
Yeah. Yeah,
Wow. Well, you all definitely stepped out on faith and have a tremendous document here. It's just so wonderful, you know, the whole social entrepreneurship, the healing through creativity and art, and then, you know, this story about Rwanda and the women that
mm-hmm.
has never been told. I mean, this is a very different story.
It is a very different story. I mean, we've actually encountered that, you know, that so many people, when they hear about a documentary about Rwanda, they're prepared to be depressed, and they don't want to see it, and they're just, you know, all they know is the horror. And when they see the film, they just emerge with this glow, saying, you know, I have no idea of the complexity of the story, and it's such an unusual mix of moods. You know, we have the beauty, the transformative beauty of these women and the drumming, and we have their intimate stories, which are really moving, and we have a lot of humor and suspense with the ice cream story, and we go into the genocide, but not in the usual way. You know, I like to say and to tell people that our filming of the Month of Mourning hasn't been done before. You know, most films about Rwanda, and there are wonderful films about Rwanda, but they haven't captured that live event, that live moment, and then there's the women in the developing world and the entrepreneurship part. So there are a lot of threads in the film.
Yeah, yeah. So why don't you tell us sort of how you enter the story? Because the two women who have the ice cream business in Brooklyn's Blue Marble Ice Cream, Jenny Dundas and
Jenny Dundas and Alexis Meeson,
right. And I believe Odile Kiki Katis,
right.
Who starts the, she's a Rwandan playwright, and she's the one that founded the first women's drum troupe in Rwanda.
Right.
She is the one that meets them and invites them to Rwanda to help them start a business. Is that correct?
Absolutely correct. It's really important that everybody understands that this was the idea of a Rwandan, a very unusual Rwandan. She's quite a visionary, but it's a Rwandan who came up with this idea. It's not a Western idea. And she invited them to come. And as it says in the movie, Jenny at first thought she wanted them to import something, you know, to Rwanda. But no, she wanted them to come and help the women start their very own business. And they agreed to do that. And they founded a small nonprofit called Blue Marble Dreams and raised some money through their nonprofit. And I heard this story just as they were preparing to go and begin the ice cream project. And I just thought it was such an amazing and unusual story, you know. Drumming, ice cream, Rwanda. It's just not the three things you usually have in a sentence. And I thought it was really worth exploring, and I called my brother, who is a documentarian living in New York, and I said, why don't we go see if we've got a movie here? This just sounds remarkable. Mm-hmm. And really, within a few months, we were on a plane to Rwanda, and we really didn't know what we would find there. We hadn't met Kiki, we hadn't met the Rwandan women, and we just jumped on the chance to try to make this movie. And you know, then we got there, and we were really pretty blown away by Kiki, who's really quite a visionary, and the women. And we started following the story, and we shot over the period of a year and a half. We went back four times, and each time we spent about 6 weeks there. So we got to know these women very, very well. And so when we finally did finally did decide to shoot during the month of mourning, it was a year into the project, and we wanted to make sure to wait until we knew people well enough, because it's a very traumatizing time.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, that's how we made the movie. But we it was an act of faith, really, getting on that plane to Rwanda the first time, because we had no idea really what we would find.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, was it your first time to Africa?
It was.
Oh,
it was.
Okay.
Yeah. I always wanted to go to Africa, but I never had the opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
So this was it.
Yeah, yeah. And the women, you introduce us to them in the film and tell us their stories, which are quite, you know, horrific and tragic, yet they, have transformed this tragedy into triumph, so to speak, with regards to what they're doing with their lives. And, you know, some of them have had to move, and, you know, some women don't have any family left. And
and
these are both Hutu and Tutsi women.
Absolutely.
Together, and like, oh, my gosh. And like, whenever I think about that, how the government wants reconciliation in a real concrete way, in that the people that might have killed your family, you're going to have to work it out.
Right.
And I'm like, and I hadn't realized until just sort of reviewing sort of the history of the 100 Days massacre, that it was 17 years ago this year. And I'm like,
actually, it was 17 years ago when we made the film.
Oh, okay.
But it is going to come up this coming April as the 20th commemoration.
Yeah.
So,
and isn't that amazing? It's been 20 years.
Wow. Yeah, you know, it's a long time, but really it's a short time. And if you think of it as, you know, it's within one generation.
Mm-hmm.
And so everyone, except little children, everyone was affected, you know, on both sides. So that's what makes it such an amazing thing. If you compare it to, you know, Germany and the Holocaust, it's like, you know, as if Jews went back and lived in Germany and all was, and we're working, you know, within, you know, a year of the Holocaust, and then it was only 15, 20 years later, within one generation. You know, that's very hard to imagine. But in Rwanda, that's the situation. And, you know, I think Kiki was very visionary in that she realizes that even though there can be a government mandate that, you know, we'll want to live together, and they give up these designations of Hutu and Tutsi, that it is still very hard to rebuild people from within, you know, to rebuild the spirit mm-hmm. of people. And that's where her initiatives come from, you know, and that's where the drumming first came from. It first became, you know, a healing effort to bring Hutu and Tutsi women together. And then, of course, it was a women's empowerment effort because drumming had been taboo. So there were two things combined there. And that gave these women a lot of confidence and a lot of joy and brought them together in a really remarkable way. So that then, I guess she started the drumming troupe in 2005, so that in 2008, you know, they were solidified as a group and had found a lot from drumming together and were ready to start a new adventure mm-hmm. with the Ice Cream Project, which really was quite a remarkable project since none of them had ever tasted ice cream and they didn't know what it was.
Right, that is so funny.
Isn't it funny?
Yeah, just trying to get people to just try it.
Right, but that they were willing to go on this mm-hmm. journey because mm-hmm. they trusted Kiki that something new, something untried, something really, really new could bring them something new in their lives. And that's a lot of what Kiki's ideas are, is to awaken people to unimagined possibilities for themselves and for their country, and to kind of really be aware that change is possible for themselves and for their country.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it was really interesting watching sort of just the whole idea, okay, we're going to have an ice cream, you know, business, and we all have shares, and, you know, everyone, they had to decide who was going to be in, you know, what positions, and then they had to get a place to make the ice cream, and then they had to get the equipment and
mm-hmm.
all of that, which was really interesting, and then they had to have the marketing, and then they brought in, you know, folks from outside, from the United States, to help with, you know, developing business plans and all that
mm-hmm.
kind of stuff. Yeah, talk a little bit about sort of as a director, but also as, you know, being there present. Just want to talk about, you know, sort of the women and you know, some of the insights that you got on you know, watching the women sort of develop the business. You know, outside of, you know, doing your filmmaking, you know, sort of like outside of that role.
Right, right. Well, it was just kind of really fun and you know, a joy to watch them, you know, come into their own, really.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like I said, they already had a lot of confidence and a lot of bonding and a lot of empowerment from being in the drum troupe. But then, you know, the ice cream shop was a whole new challenge, and they had to make some tough decisions, you know, about their friends, as we showed in the scene where one of them had to get fired. And I think it was just very exciting to see all the depth of who they were as people and their resilience and their strength, because I think that, you know, we're so used to thinking of people, particularly in the developing world and particularly in places where there's a lot of conflict and tragedy, as victims.
Mm-hmm.
And these women are so not victims, you know. They have really seized on the opportunities that have come to them and made them their own. And I think that the movie speaks to all of us in that respect, and certainly speaks to issues of conflict and underserved communities in our own country. You know, it's totally applicable. And, you know, I felt very inspired by Kiki and by these women. And so it was just great to watch it unfold for them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So talk a little bit about Kiki, sort of tell us about her and her use of art in this way to bridge conflict, or to sort of bridge communities that might be separated because of conflict, as in this case, and also as a way to heal, you know, the rifts that are in the community, as well as bring joy and happiness. And the drumming is, you know, a physical activity. So as you're drumming, you're actually working stuff out, and then they also dance. I mean, it's like whole choreography. I mean, it's just really
right.
gorgeous, like this choreography and everything
right.
involved. And I was wondering, are
Are the women coming to town when you have your theatrical debut here in the Bay Area? Because I know there are going to be some TED Talks connected to this.
Yeah. Well, just to go backwards in your question to that part first.
Okay.
We were really so thrilled. One of the things that the film has done is to cast a light on Kiki and the women, and so they're getting their own attention separate mm-hmm. from the film,
yes.
which we're so thrilled about. They received an important award in D.C. Last year, the Common Ground Award, which has gone to, like, the president of, like, Ellen Johnson Sirleaf, the president of Liberia, Desmond Tutu,
mm-hmm.
Jimmy Carter. So that was their first recognition for their peace efforts, and then they got invited to England,
mm-hmm.
to the Skoll World Forum on Social Entrepreneurship, and then they've been invited now to TED Women 2013, which is a TED Talk, a women's TED Talk that is being held in San Francisco, December 4th and 5th.
Mm-hmm.
So that's so thrilling, for one. It's going to be broadcast all around the world. They're going to be playing there, and Kiki's going to be giving a small talk.
Nice.
And, of course, for us, we're very lucky because they're bringing them here. And so Kiki and four drummers will be coming, and we are opening the movie the weekend after the TED Talk, December 6th.
Mm-hmm.
And we will have them with us that weekend, and they're going to be playing at selected screenings over the course of that weekend.
Mm.
It's still being decided which places they're going to be, but we'll try to post that on our website,
okay.
and on Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
And they will be playing after one screening in San Francisco, and then one screening in Berkeley. I can say for sure will be Saturday night, the 7th.
Okay.
And they'll be playing at a special screening at the Rafael Cinema
mm-hmm.
in on Sunday in mm-hmm. San Rafael. And in the city, they'll either be playing Friday night or Saturday during the day after our screening.
Mm-hmm.
Then they're going home back to Rwanda on Monday, and our film will continue to play during the week
mm-hmm.
in San Francisco and in Berkeley. And we hope we'll get a really big audience, because the success that we have in San Francisco is really going to be part of determining how successful we can be in rolling it out across the country.
Mm-hmm.
Theater owners across the country need to see that we can fill the house, really. And so we're really going to ask for support in people coming to see the movie, because it will really enable us to send it out to cities across the country.
Mm-hmm.
So we want you to put the word out
certainly.
that we will be showing the film for 1 week in San Francisco and Berkeley starting on December 6th.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
To go back to the earlier part of your question, Kiki is quite a remarkable, I think, visionary. She is a playwright and theater director, and so theater is her way of thinking about the world. And one of the things she said with her idea about the drum troupe was, of course, yes, bringing women together in a group activity, bringing them together in what is a very physical and healing activity, and also bringing them together in a way that hadn't been done before. But she also used with the group kind of the metaphor of theater, which is that you come into the theater and you leave your other world behind. You leave your troubles behind, you leave your baggage behind, and you enter onto the stage and you create a new reality together. Excuse me, I need some water. You create this new reality together, and that becomes a new reality. And then at the end of the experience of the theater, you go back out, and your life is still there, and your problems are still there, but maybe you look at them a little differently. And that's how she talked to the women about the drum troupe. You know, everybody knew and got to know each other and knew the stories, the sad stories, to some extent, between one another. But the drum troupe wasn't a place to endlessly discuss those things. The drum troupe was a place to leave that outside the gate, to leave the tribal affiliation outside the gate
mm-hmm.
and all the tragedy outside the gate, and come in together and create something new together. And in the same way, she thought about the ice cream shop. The ice cream shop is a business, of course, but ice cream in particular, because it was something new, because it was something joyful, and because specifically it's a respite from everyday life. So in the same way, you know, you have struggles in your life, you have poverty, you have sadness, But you are entitled to take some moments with you and your children, or and get yourself an ice cream and have and be in the community and relax a little bit. There's very little of that sense in Rwanda that you are entitled to happiness, that you are entitled to some relaxation in your life. And I think this is her idea, and it's a very profound one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. And, you know, to be, you know, sort of on the cutting edge with regards to not letting sort of gender-based prohibitions stop her from, you know, sort of exploring other kinds of territories and performance avenues for women.
Right.
You know, to look at drumming. And then I love it in the film when the women are in, I don't remember the details, but they're at an event and there are men, male drummers, and they're talking and they end up sort of creating an ensemble, you know, where they perform in the same program together and support one another. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
That's at the end of the movie, and it's actually something that Kiki and the drummers created with
mm-hmm.
what they have called the Rwandan Drum Festival.
Ah,
it's their creation, and they invited the male drummers into it,
mm-hmm.
and they invited the Rwandan men and some Burundian men, which you see in the film,
mm-hmm.
and the men come, and they rehearse together, and then they create this festival together. But it is at the initiation of these women drummers that this festival occurs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It just seems that that the whole movement, you know, around this art and healing and entrepreneurship is about building community.
Right.
In a real holistic way. You know, sort of healing what's hurting inside us individually through a shared positive activity that brings joy to our audiences. And then it's about, you know, sort of bringing the men and women together, you know, around something that's celebratory, you know, and, you know, drumming always gets you feeling good because it just lifts your spirits. It's just,
right.
That part is just like, oh, my God, I hope they have, like, a CD comes out of this, some kind of soundtrack.
Well, we're working on that.
Yeah.
It's taken a lot to produce a movie, so we'll see if we can produce a soundtrack.
Right, yeah. It's just so wonderful. Oh, my goodness, we're going to have so much fun on the first weekend of December.
Yes, good.
Wow.
Well, I hope you'll be announcing it on your program and putting it out on your social media. And
mm-hmm. Definitely, definitely.
Encouraging people to check our website also,
mm-hmm.
which is, I want to put in a plug for that.
Oh,
it
certainly.
Is www.sweetdreamsrwanda.com. And so it's sweetdreamsrwanda.com, and we're going to be on our screenings page. We'll be announcing our screenings, and there's a Facebook link, Twitter link, and we will also, we have a mailing list. So anybody can join our mailing list and then get announcements, not just right now, but in future. For what the film is up to and what the women are up to. So we encourage everybody to do that. And, of course, we encourage people to like us on Facebook because that helps spread the word
mm-hmm.
to their networks, and it's really important.
Mm-hmm. So what's going on now with the women? How's the ice cream business? Have they expanded it?
Well, they haven't expanded it yet, and it's, you know, it's surviving, which is kind of the first major miracle. It's,
mm-hmm.
It's 3 years. Since it opened, and they're holding their own. They've had various internal shifts in the shop and in the co-op, but they're holding their own, and Blue Marble is helping them with the idea of expanding. There was an offer, actually, on the table from some other group who wanted to open a shop kind of with their name, Sweet Dreams, in the capital and kick back the profits to these women, kick back some of the profits to these women, and these women turned it down. They said no, they didn't want their name used. They wanted to have their own shop in the capital. So they're holding out for that.
Oh,
and we hope that's going to happen. And, you know, everything continues, but it is a struggle. It's a struggle financially, and it's a struggle financially for the drum troupe as well, because that's always been a kind of... it's not a business, right? It's open to lots of women.
Mm-hmm.
And yet PT has had to find means of support for things like the drum festival, for transportation, for the drums, for the costumes, and also to give them a little so that they can commit to rehearsal time, mm-hmm. because these are women who work in the field. These are women who don't have a lot of leisure in their lives. So it is a financial struggle, and with our screenings and with our outreach, we are trying to contribute, you know, a big portion of that money back to them. Mm-hmm. Once we meet basic costs, which we're still trying to meet, but we're hoping to be getting past that and contributing money back to them. And anybody is also welcome to contribute to them on our website. We have a special bank account for them called the Rwanda Women's Collective.
Oh, nice. Very nice. Yeah.
Yeah.
Huh. Wow. So what prepared you in, you know, as a director, you know, you received lots of awards for your work. Quite a few awards, and your brother has also. What prepared you, you know, to sort of step out into this venture, or is that the way you normally make films? You just see a great idea and pursue it.
No, this was a bit of a gamble and a risk, and I don't know. I was just captivated. You know, I've had a long career as a feature film editor, and I've won some awards, gotten recognition as a feature film editor. But I had never directed anything before, and I certainly had never directed anything in a country far, far away in a language I didn't speak. So it was a bit crazy, really. I invited my brother into the process because he has had more production experience than I did, more documentary experience than I did, and I actually thought our mixture of talents and experience would be really good for this film, because I wanted to make a film that was narratively driven, which is my background, mm-hmm. but it was a documentary, and we wanted it to have a verite feel as well, which is his background, and I thought together we would make something interesting, but it was a gamble. It was far away, and like I said, it was very challenging to go there and to meet all the women and to figure out how we were going to work through interpreters and all of that. But we just hit it off with the women, and we worked well together, and we were very, very lucky with the... We started working with young students who were part of an organization called Orphans of Rwanda. They were all kids who, from both sides, mm-hmm. who were survivors, essentially, mm-hmm. and so they were sort of sensitive to the subject, and they were university students, so they had some English ability, and they were very bright, mm. and those were our interpreters and our translators, and we trained them as our camera assistants.
Nice.
So we just hit the ground running and found that by keeping our crew very small, very, very small, very, very intimate, we were able to get to know the women and to get these stories, which, you know, make the film powerful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you have the list of credits. You know, you've got your Rwandan team, and you've got your New York team, and you got your support people. And I noticed that Deborah Santana is one of the co-executive producers. She's the director of the Museum of the African Diaspora.
I know.
I'm like, oh, you know Deborah. Wow.
Yeah. Well, I didn't know Deborah at the beginning, but she did come on as our co-executive producer, and she is kind of hosting the event on December 8th in San Rafael, and mm-hmm. she just saw the film. We've needed to get support along the way, and so all along the way, so we had some initial support when we were shooting, and then when we came back, we needed more support, and we were able to show the film to certain people, and Deborah came on at that point.
Mm-hmm.
So we're just totally thrilled with her support. And
Great. And then you have Grace Hightower De Niro. She's another one of your executive producers. There's just
exactly.
so many powerful women.
Yes, well, Grace was another one that came to us after we had, you know, shot and were in the final stages of editing. And again, she saw the film and loved it. And it dovetailed with her own her own passion. She is involved with Rwanda herself. She started a coffee company called Grace Hightower Coffees of Rwanda and is working in Rwanda herself. So mm-hmm. so that was a great, you know, fusion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I bet, you know, sort of when one thinks of Rwanda and remembers the tragedy, you know, the horror there, and then you see this, you experience this film. Are you all going to have ice cream for us?
Well, we're trying our best, but we're having drummers for you, Wanda, you know. we did have ice cream. We had ice cream in New York
Okay. Because
Blue Marble Ice Cream is in New York, and they were able to supply it. If you find any ice cream angels for us, we would love to have ice cream at our screenings.
Okay, I'll see what I can do.
See what you can do. I think it would be great.
Yeah, just a little bit, you know.
Yeah.
It sort of just goes with the film. You got
it. It does, doesn't it? I know.
Yeah, I mean, the whole idea, you know, we take ice cream for granted, but for someone to experience ice cream for the first time, it's like, what is this stuff? Oh, it's cold and it's sweet and it's like, and it melts. Wow.
Right?
Yeah, it's really, really lovely. Wow. Wow. Well, thank you. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you, Wanda.
For this wonderful conversation and for this sweet, sweet film.
Thank you so much. Pass the word out.
I
know you
will. Yeah, definitely.
Right.
And I look forward to being in the theater for one of these, you know, afternoons or evenings with the women.
Yeah. Well, like I said, our schedule isn't entirely set yet, so I can't announce it for sure which nights they're where, although I do know in Berkeley they will be at the Shattuck Cinema on Saturday night, the 7th.
Okay.
And they will be at Rafael on the 8th.
Mm-hmm.
And then in the city they will either be Friday night or Saturday night. And we will post this on our website, and I can also maybe let you know, and you can put it out on your...
Oh, yes, certainly.
On your network.
Mm-hmm. I certainly will. Definitely.
I'll make an announcement.
Okay.
That would be great.
Okay. Well, thank you again.
All right. All right. Looking forward to seeing you. Bye-bye. Right.
Bye.
Bye.
Now
Well, that was McLeod and Quinn. Look at what the light did. And that's dedicated to the women of Rwanda, specifically these women who are drumming and making ice cream. Oh, my goodness. And I'm sure the TED Women 2010, you might be able to catch that online, so you should do a little search and see what time that kicks off today and is continuing through tomorrow and Friday, Saturday, Sunday. The film Sweet Dreams opens in the San Francisco Bay Area with stops in San Francisco, Berkeley, and San Rafael, and then it's going to be continuing there for the week. So you don't want to miss it, specifically this weekend, since all the special guests are going to be in town. I was going to play a little bit of this pre-recorded interview, March in 2011, when Berkeley Rep had the play, Lynn Nottage's play, Ruined Up. And so I interviewed a couple of the actors who were in that play, and I want to play a little bit of that show right now, and then we're going to stop it. So if you want to catch the rest of it, you have to go to the archives. That's March 16, 2011. And we're looking forward to speaking to Nicole Clay Moon. She's been a guest on the show before, talk about House of Matter, the Embodiment Project's latest work, which is going to be up at ODC Theater the weekend of Friday the 13th, 14th, maybe 15th. I'm not looking at the schedule right now in front of my face, but I know it's that weekend, and we've got tickets to give away. Nobody so far has claimed them. I offered them last week on Friday, and so far no one has claimed tickets, so I'm like, maybe we might, I don't know, I would like to give them away. So we have a couple of pairs, courtesy of Nicole Clay Moon's Embodiment Project. And I don't know who else is joining us at this early hour. Valerie Trout, Moon Candy director, might be joining us. And Sabila Grimes might be joining us as well. She's coming up from L.A., so it should be fun. It's always good to talk to Nicole. She's doing some wonderful work with poetry and poetic dance, always on the live music, with a live music, soundscape, creating some really wonderful nuances, always exploring hard topics, but coming out victorious. So, the physicality of her work is just so awesome. And, dance theater at its best. So, anyway, so hold on for that, and here is Ruined, rebroadcast.
You are cold in my soul, you're in my head. You have taken all my blue, and you turned it red. Shall I catch you as you charm up from the dust? Shall I ride to your grave? Yeah, I must. So today I promise forever, even though today will end, tomorrow may be never.
Good morning and welcome to Wanda's Picks, the Black Arts and Culture program of the African Sisters Media Network. And that was Toshi Reagan and It Gets Better. And you will understand the relevance of that tune. When we talk to who are a part of the Berkeley Repertory Theater in co-production with Huntington Theater Company and La Jolla Playhouse, presenting Lynn Nottage's Pulitzer Prize-winning play Ruined at Berkeley Repertory Theater at the Rota Theater on main stage through April 10th. So I want to welcome Oberon K.A. Ejipan, who portrays the character Christian. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, and Tony Patano. Is it Patano? Is that correct?
It's Patano. You said it correctly.
Oh, well, first try. Excellent. I practiced Oberon. We, like, did rehearsal before we went on.
Yeah, you did pretty well, actually. Tony is, thank you.
And Tony is Mama Nadi, and she is like, oh, my God, we are so happy that Mama Nadi and Christian are a part of Ruined. I'm so happy that they're not it. Created you all because it made it so that I could live through the play.
Yeah, I'm glad she created us too. But it's definitely doing honor, paying homage and honor to these beautiful women and people of the Congo who are living daily such atrocities, and yet there is hope and just the nature of being, and they their beautiful spirits shine. So. It's exciting. It's an exciting piece.
Right, yeah. Lynn Otis says that in Ruin, the women do a fragile dance between hope and disillusionment in an attempt to navigate life on the edge of an unforgiving conflict. And she says she was shielded by her desire to tell the story of war, but through the eyes of women, who, as we know, rarely start conflicts but inevitably find themselves right smack in the middle of them. And she says she was interested in giving voice and audience to African women living in the shadows of war. So I was wondering, what brought you to the play, Tony? And why Mama Nadi? She carries so much of the piece insofar as her creating this oasis within this really catastrophic zone, and the women that come to her are broken, and she repairs them.
Well, I think. For the reasons you just said, that's one of the reasons why. I was fortunate enough to see this beautiful show in its first incarnation in New York City. I have a good couple of good friends who were in the original production, and I was just blown away by just the simplicity of the piece. It was in a much smaller venue, and just the power of the words and Lynn's journey in this particular play. And the rare time that women of my age and of, you know, whether it's African American or African descent, get a chance to play such an epic role. Men over the years get to play Willie Loman or Richard III and all of those wonderful lead roles in these fabulously epic dramas. And it's rare that we get that opportunity as black actresses. And so that was also a wonderful draw. And this is a beautiful, beautiful character and an amazing play. And all of those things were things that I wanted to be a part of. And more, like I said, more than anything, the challenge of it is just it's just irresistible. So very fortunate. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And Oberon, your character, Christian, he is such a free radical. Talk about him and how you came to create such a remarkable man on stage for us.
Oh, well, thank you. That's a whole lot to say, but I actually never saw the play before. I've been reading about it, the reviews. I actually have, I think, about two friends in the original production. And I've been reading on Wikipedia about it and why Lynn Otis decided to do it. When I did the audition, when I got it and the rehearsal, that was kind of like the first time I've actually really seen Christian, only through my eyes. And in doing this play, I modeled it after Patrice Lumumba. Who was actually part of who was the prime minister of the Republic of Congo, May 1960. And I started to study him and how he worked, and he was definitely a poet and intelligent man who saw the inside of things. And that's what I used as my character. Christian is a man who understands the future as well as the present and also the past. He understands cause and effect, and he's very alert about what's going on within the play even before it happens. So, you know, he's a romantic man who who tries to always give that message of hope to that beautiful Mama Nadi of hers, actually Tony. And he always tries to let her know that, you know, the future is promising. And the same way Patrice Lumumba did that around May 1960 or so, and went on to June 1960 to create the independence of the Congo. It had to be a person who understood the future, who believed in dreams, and was very insightful for something like that to happen or to occur. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, thank you. Yeah, I let me tell our audience a little bit about both of you before we continue on with the story. Tony, I saw you in Polk County.
Mm-hmm.
I was in the house. I came twice to see that play. It was so wonderful. Zora Neale Hurston's Lost Piece. That was wonderful.
Yeah.
And sorry, go ahead.
No, I was thinking I came in on that one a little late in the process. I replaced one of a wonderful actress, Linda Gravatt, and it was right before I started filming Weeds here later on in the series several years ago. So Berkeley was really wonderful, which was one of the reasons, too, that I was so readily accepting of doing this particular tour. So it's been great.
Mm-hmm.
Community.
Right, yeah. So when you're not in Berkeley, are you in New York?
I am. I reside in New York for the most part. But again, work takes you everywhere, and that's been a blessing as well. Primarily Manhattan, and as are the majority of our cast members. Oberon, I think, hails from Philadelphia area right now, but he also was a New York originate. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I'm actually both places, New York and Philly.
Yeah. So, Tony, it says you were also seen on Broadway in 45 seconds from Broadway, and your numerous off-Broadway and regional productions include the National Tour of Legends and most recently Neighbors at the Public. You garnered multiple nominations and a Nomic Vision Award for your performance as Helia James on Showtime.
Yeah.
Weeds.
Right.
Tell me again how you pronounce it.
Helia James on Weeds, yeah.
Helia James, yeah. And you said that was filmed here?
That's it, yeah. And it's still a show that's airing on Showtime. This is getting ready to go into its seventh season series. Yeah, I was on the first 3 years of it. And you know, my character is still alive. We're just, you know, who knows when I might pop up again. But yeah, it's been a wonderful journey. I really enjoy doing challenging roles that, you know, force people and myself to stretch and think that sometimes challenges people's ideas of what is right, moral, their belief systems, and, you know, it really forces you to confront who you are in the world, and I think this play does that in spades. And you know, I don't think that there's a person who leaves the theater unchanged. People have very strong reactions to this play, and I think Lynn does a beautiful job of not preaching and proselytizing, but presenting what is and allowing the characters both positive in their aspects and their foibles live in the same human being, and that makes for rich, rich characterization. Lovely and wonderful as Christian's character is, he also has a dark side. As dark and bold as Mama Nadi is, she also has amazing compassion and a high spirit. And these women who come in ruined and broken down, you see the joy and the simplicity of reading a romance novel or bickering over a magazine, the common everyday livelihood that we all seek. So I just think it's a terrific, terrific play for anyone who's looking for an evening in the theater that's not going to allow them to sit idly, but but to genuinely drink in something that's happening right now, and just a peek into the human spirit. It's a beautiful piece, mm-hmm. and I'm excited to be a part of it.
And it's definitely a play that is very exciting, and it's filled with twists and turns, and there's no way that an audience member can assume what the next scene is going to be. There will be not one minute in which that you will be bored. Am I right or am I wrong?
You are not bored. Yeah. Oh, no. No. Boredom is not a word that you would attach to ruin. Oh, no. It's like, can I sit through any more? Should I run out of here?
Bless your heart.
Yeah. I mean, I really love the opening part of the second act because that really kind of saved us. It was like, I couldn't even move to go out to get anything to drink for, you know, during intermission. I'm like frozen to my seat. Like, oh, my God.
Good morning. Is this Nicole?
Yes, hello.
Hi, Nicole. Hello. welcome to the show. I've been telling our audience that you were going to be joining us.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Yeah, I can't hear you really well. I hear a lot of air, but I don't hear you really well. Is there a way that you can...
Is it better?
Yeah, are you driving?
Okay.
Yeah, I hear traffic. Maybe say, I don't know, are you the only one that's joining us at this early hour?
I believe so.
Or is Valerie going to join us in Sevilla?
I did, Sevilla also said he might be calling in, so we'll have to see. I'm not sure.
Okay. Well, I'm glad you could join us to talk about House of Matter and the Embodiment Project. Your latest show. I really enjoyed House of Matter. I think I saw it. I don't know if it was last year or the year before. It was at Dance Mission when I last saw House of Matter. How long ago was that?
That was June of 2012.
Oh, 2 years ago. Okay, I knew it felt like it was a while back.
Yeah.
So tell us about this wonderful work that you do. I just love the whole name, embodiment, you know, sort of like, what does that mean, embodiment?
Well, let's see. So Embodiment Project is a multimedia, multidisciplinary dance theater company, and we work predominantly with street dance style, whacking, popping, breaking, hip-hop proper, and really trying to bring our love for street dance as a form and the culture, bring it to the stage and use it to tell stories, stories that are mostly based in autobiographical narratives and that also speak to social justice issues that we feel really strongly about. So we work a lot with the theme of violence towards women, sexual abuse, cultural, race identity, body politics. But we tell stories that are real to us, the things that we've been through, and how the body holds memory. So when you ask, what does embodiment mean? I really like that word because I think a lot of different people have, you know, their own interpretation. But for me, embodiment is really about being true. And I think that dance really has the capacity to communicate on a level that is very unique that other art forms don't have in the same way. So dance, kind of like our body doesn't ever tell a lie. We might speak it sometimes, but really we hold those truths within our body. We're, like my mentor, Rennie Harris, likes to say, we're physical, walking historians, that we hold memory, blood memory, the memory of our ancestors in our DNA. It's all physically within us, and sometimes that information can get transmitted through movement that I believe can surpass our cognitive awareness, or even beyond emotions. I mean, what we have one word for love, but there are so many different meanings of love and how to use that word that I really think that movement, when aligned with that awareness, can transmit that kind of meaning. So that's why I like that word, embodiment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And like you were saying, that we might say one thing with our mouths, but then the body doesn't lie because, I don't know, maybe it can't, which is really great that there's a part of us that we think we control that really we don't control, that's operating on a different sort of plane, that it speaks irregardless to what we say. Sometimes it's real. There's some kind of, you know, sometimes is there a real incongruence between what we say and what we do, which we think about that a lot. People say a lot of things and then they don't do it, or it comes out differently. It's like, interesting.
Because they're all. It's kind of like the implicit memory, which is the muscle memory that I feel like movement can allow us to tap into. And I'm really fascinated with the question of how can we align that information and that awareness with what we think we know. So I don't know if this makes sense, but I always tell my dancers, it doesn't matter if the audience does not know what we're trying to say. They just need to know that we know what we're trying to say so that they can go on the journey with us and trust us on it. But if we don't if we're not at least asking those questions or trying to connect that with our subconscious, our implicit memory, or what the spirit, whatever we call that, that gets communicated or transmitted through our movement, then I think that's where there's a disconnect.
I think this might be Sabila on the phone. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm fine. Nicole, is that Sabila?
This is Sabila.
Sabila. Oh, thank you. Sorry for mispronouncing your name. Sabila Grimes?
No worries.
Yeah,
yes.
Cool. Glad you could join us. We're just talking about this whole notion of embodiment and what that means. Maybe you could tap into that conversation and tell us what, for you, the spoken word artist that's going to be joining Nicole's Embodiment Project as a special guest, or have you already participated in one of her shows before?
Oh, yeah, I've had the honor and privilege to participate in the process for going on a year plus now, so.
Oh, nice. Tell us about the journey and what that embodiment, what does that mean to you as a lyricist and a spoken word artist?
For me in this process right now, I mean, embodiment means so many things, but right now I'm acknowledging that we have the opportunity and the ability to give our bodies permission to say what they have to say. I'm given the opportunity as a mover, as a dancer, as a choreographer.
Yeah, just a second. Nicole, are you on the phone?
Oh, no.
It's really loud. Where are you? Yeah, you can mute it when you're not talking, maybe, and then we won't have all the noise.
Okay.
All right, Sabila, go ahead. I just want to make sure people can hear you, that's all.
Yeah, it sounded like 40 folks doing all kinds of crazy construction back there. With no work song. Just in the process, just as a mover and a shaker to allow the vocabulary, the verbal vocabulary, what we say with our mouths, what I say with my mouth, to work in concert with what the codes and signifiers of the body, but also to be not just contemplative but aware and acknowledge that there are certain things that there are embodied knowledges, and there are also embodied constructions of how I hold my body to communicate something. So in this piece, we're critiquing and unpacking and contemplating the ideas of what masculinity is and what manhood is. So there's a consciousness that goes into to what the body is doing. And part of that is just me giving my permission to break the constructed ideas of how I present myself as vocabularies of my body, as an African man in this country. Like, how have I been taught? How have I been socialized? How have I made my own personal constructions and strategies to carry this earth suit through the world? Like, what am I trying to say? And so once I began to contemplate that, I realized that, oh, wow, this body is so intelligent. There's so much vocabulary. There's so many that I don't say with the body because I'm trying to stick to certain scripts. And so in this piece, I get a chance to go off book and explore and give myself permission and give my body permission to say different things and to communicate these things through the spoken word and through the corporeal spoken body. And this is so part of what was happening with this piece is an exploration of beyond the definition of what it means to have embodied knowledge. And Nicole is challenging every participant, every collaborator in this work to be conscious of the knowledge that their bodies have, of the intellect, of their corporeal intellect, and to also acknowledge what they tend to say with their body in alignment with masculinity, in alignment with being from a certain region, in alignment with being tough, being soft, being somewhere in between. To identify with and what we choose not to and why we make those choices and how they show up in the work. And so it's really exciting for me to be able to do it both, to have it supported by what I say verbally and how what I say verbally is supported by very conscious and deliberate movements of the body that work in concert with each other. And then just giving myself permission to allow the intuitive qualities of both what I might say with my mouth and what I will say with my body to run free as well.
Do you ever, like when you were, because you all have been on this journey for a year now, I believe you said, in the process of the work, you know, you've got Moon Candy, see Valerie Charles Moon Candy, five vocalists and four musicians, having the original music, and then you've got the company, the Embodiment Project's company, and then you got this theme, you know, of the protagonist journeying through the rooms of a man's house and exposing the pitfalls of masculinity in contemporary culture. And I'm wondering, as you explored this, you know, sort of developing, you know, what you were going to write around this, as you were exploring it, did you come into any rooms that you hadn't been aware of within your person, within your psyche, and that might have been disturbing? And what did you do with that?
I don't think I've come across anything that's been more disturbing than what I've been aware of in this exploration of masculinity and manhood. And I have to say, in particular, I'm focused a bit on identifying as an African man in this country and in this experience. So I think that's pretty particular, as opposed to just a general wash of masculinity. But I would say that over the last probably 6 to 7 months of the journey, because since Nicole and I are co-writing, it's really nice to have her perspective, and it's been great to be in sort of a writing process and creative process with a point of view that on paper wouldn't be considered a masculine point of view. But I think what is being revealed is, yes, as a woman, Nicole comes from a unique perspective of observing masculinity on a male body or in experiences with people that are, you know, either are, that are gendered male or cisgendered male. But what I think is being revealed is, at this point, and she can speak from her point of view, is that we've kind of crossed that threshold. Not to say that we've explored everything, but we crossed the threshold where we're identifying with the masculinity and both the masculine attributes and characteristics of both male and female persons. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So usually we kind of corner it to, oh, the only masculine qualities that are had are in the male body. And we're kind of seeing something. We're exploring masculinity as it shows up or as it can be identified by women in this process and by men in this process, and we're complicating just that conversation about masculinity. And, of course, on the flip side, what it's revealing, and I don't think it's as disturbing, is we're seeing what feminine qualities show up in the male experience and the female experience, those ideas. And so I think this is pretty at the core, one of the gems of this piece.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I'm gonna unmute Nicole. Oh, hey, Nicole.
Hi.
Hi. I want you to comment on this process that you and Savela as co-writers, you know, the things that he's been saying. I wanted to give you some opportunity to talk about that process, and then you end up externalizing this and putting it on, you know, placing this work on the bodies of your cast, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, so talk about that.
let's see. So I kind of want to speak to relationships. Because this work, because it is asking us to kind of go inside and ask some harder questions, or just be free in the space and be kind of emotionally available to discuss what happened, you know, some of the writing prompts or kind of movement explorations that we do are things like, remember the last time you were just enraged. Like, talk about it with someone. And now let's dance it, you know. And when you kind of open that, create that kind of space for people to, it's an invitation. And, you know, the ball's really in their court in regards to how much they want to share, how deep they want to go, how personal. There's no expectation. But when there are these deeper relationships, like the one I feel so blessed to have with Sabela, that's when the real stuff comes out, when you said that room of the house that perhaps is too hard to look at for myself, to actually go into those rooms long enough to make art out of my time in that room, or to make the art be what gets me into the room, because there's nothing else that will get me in there and back out in my life, because I really use my art in that way. Knowing that I have these really strong bonds and that these people actually love me and I love them, and there's this survival component, like I know that they're going to get my back if it's embarrassing or if I feel ashamed if I go there, or I can talk about it. And that kind of thing, I really believe that, you know, when the trust is there, that's when the art is the strongest. And so I've had the privilege of knowing Sabela for, you know, we've collaborated in the past when we were at UCLA about, I don't know, it was 5 years ago. And so that history, I think, has allowed me to have a certain collaboration now that I've never had with another artist, because it's really required a lot of risks. I think working with Sabela is the first time I've ever experienced another choreo poet, movement-based spoken word artist, who can kind of embody my words and bring his own. So this last monologue he presented at Hip Hop Dance Fest. It started off as just my words that he memorized, which is kind of crazy enough for me to see my words on another body who's moving with them, you know, dancing them in a very signature way. That was definitely a first, and that was really rewarding and beautiful. And then this draft, he brought in his own language to it. So it was this really seamless intersection of my words and his words. And that was like one of those moments, you know, when collaboration works and it's just like, I could never do this alone. This is beyond my, you know, brainchild. This is something bigger and I think that surrender and that trust is why it worked. So I don't know if that answered your question about relationships and or about internalizing the work, but I really believe in the relationships. And that's the same with Moon Candy. Valerie Trout, I think our values are very aligned, which is, I think, why our collaboration has worked for the past 5 years. And she, you know, three of the folks in her band were like her high school besties, you know. So they have this incredible history. And it's like the people that I get to make art with right now are also the people that, you know, have helped me through heartbreak and that are by my side if there's a loss in the family. And when you see that on a stage, that kind of commitment and love for one another, I just feel like that reads. There's something that we can just feel that when it's in the room, even if it's not, if we're not consciously aware of it. It's a feeling. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, and then you have some special guests. You have besides Sabela, you have your collaborator. You've got Dina Breedlove, right?
Right, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Has she participated in one of your embodiment projects prior to now?
This is her first time performing with Embodiment Project. And she's kind of like our honorary healer. I don't know if you're familiar with her work. She's also a sound
healer. Yes, I am.
Okay. She has a beautiful presence. And, you know, because, like you said, those kind of haunting rooms at the house, I love art that goes there. That's kind of my thing, is to, you know, go into the dark stuff. So this time I really wanted to take people out. I wanted to carry us, go in, but like, how do we get to that room where we leave changed and the audience isn't left still kind of bleeding and open and exposed? So so Gina and I have worked together on her last album. She did this beautiful song called Cover Me that it's about sexual abuse towards young girls, and she brought me in to do a spoken word piece. And it was such a beautiful experience working with her, because she asked me to meet her in the, you know, in the music recording studio. I didn't know what she wanted. I brought pages and pages of poetry because I've written on this issue so many different pieces. I said, okay, choose which ones you want. And she only chose about a few lines. Of, she said, okay, we're standing in the mud, and I want my, you know, my auntie to be able to listen to this track and feel, you know, invigorated. I don't want to keep them there in the mud. So together we co-wrote how to get out of that space. And it was really healing for me. So I just kind of was really excited by that collaboration and decided to bring it out through movement and bring her into the space.
Yeah, so, because, I know you're a poet, and, Layla, of course you are, just wondering if you all could both do some poetry on the air, secondly, I was just thinking about, you know, Cover Me, actually, I have that in, you know, as I have that already up, so I can play that when we finish, if you want me to, from For 1 Billion Rising, which was February 14th, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. 1 billion girls, rising all over the world against gender abuse against women and girls. That was really a beautiful day. So I wonder if you could talk a little bit more, both of you, about this whole idea of a release, you know, going there and discovering, you know, it's, you know how you, when you get a massage, you know, you open up those chakras, you know, you work those spaces where the energy is clogged and not moving. And I sort of feel that way when I watch you on stage moving on Nicole, and then, you know, sort of watching the other dancers, that you're going into these spaces where the energy is not moving and you're just like releasing it, opening it up.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I just wanted to talk a little bit about I don't know what I said first or what I said now. Just, you know, talk a little bit more about what you all are doing on stage. And also, Sabela, how, you know, sort of how your words are you going to be reciting? Are the dancers going to be talking? Because I know, Nicole, you speak. You dance. So, yeah, I was wondering how it works.
You want to take this, Sabela?
Yes, I'm trying to find out if I understand how what works.
Oh, how you know, you go, like, I'm just as a metaphor, I'm sure you've gotten a massage before,
yeah.
of having, you know, these spaces, because, you know, pain is good, and it, because our body's talking to us, and we're talking right now about us being in our bodies. A lot of times we, you know, things are really difficult and we leave our bodies to themselves, like, well, you experience this and I'll be back once it's over. It's like, no. We're going to be in our bodies and we're going to work through this together. So I'm thinking, you know, with regards to House of Matter, which within itself is, you know, we could speak for hours on house, and that is matter, which means it's got form and it's got dimension. And then we could also talk about house, you know, the house mattering, you know. And then also you think about house, what is this house? You know, we think about the temple as the body and the house, and some people don't even have houses, right? Okay, all this metaphysical talk. It's early, so this happens, you know. and then you can take any part of this you like, Sabela. And then I'm talking about sort of like going in and talking about these spaces that are tight, you know, but they, and then going in and saying the right words, like the magic word, like abracadabra, if you like that one, or ashe, if you like that one better, and just all of a sudden it's released. The energy is opened up because something in there has been resolved. Maybe not forever, and maybe the process is ongoing, but right now it's a start. I wonder if you could talk about that space and that freedom all of a sudden, where you were constricted.
Yeah.
I don't know, maybe that helped, maybe it didn't, I don't know.
yeah, I think we've talked a little bit about the different metaphors of that kind of present themselves in the title of this work, is thinking of the body as a house. And for me, it's been, just recently, where I am in experiencing this process is thinking of not necessarily the construction of a house, but thinking about what makes this house home. Mm-hmm. And what I desire in feeling at home. And so maybe about 3 weeks ago, Nicole and I were talking about just the creative process, and she is the chief facilitator of what's going on with this work. And, you know, at the same time, she has a freaking limitless creative mind. And so we were just talking about what it's like to make your house a home. And so the metaphor came up, well, you are, you know, when someone comes to visit your house, and so thinking about the work, so this work as the house. They might come and the couch is in one spot in the room, and they might come the next time it's in a different place. So you have something new on the wall, and that's, we're really talking about what's added and what's taken away from, and then on a deeper level, how we give ourselves permission to do that as creative people. And then in the performance of the work, how do I, in the experience, feel at home, and how do I invite the audience in? And this is where I am, like, metaphor-wise. Like, how, when do I bring them in? And the way my character is constructed, it's when do I put them out so I can feel at ease, and how I can surrender to what's going on. So when do I invite them back in? What rooms do I show them? What rooms are going to, oh, well, that's the so-and-so room, but I don't open the door. And maybe I bring them back to that room later. And so this has been like the meditation, and this has been something that I've, on a very personal level, am surrendering to. And this has kind of given me the release that you might be talking, but it's really just about the surrendering to the overall creative process and going, oh my gosh, Nicole wants me to add another verse to this, or, oh, I'm the one that comes from L.A. to the Bay, and they got new choreography, and now I got to figure out where I am in this. So surrendering to that is you know, because you basically talked about pain, and I'm just thinking of discomfort. We get so locked into it being one way, and then it's very natural. Our bodies are changing. This house is changing right now as we speak. And I think oftentimes we don't acknowledge that. And then if we're thinking about a physical structure like your home or your dwelling, we can give ourselves permission to furnish it or not furnish it, or to change the furniture or put the furniture on the roof. And sometimes we don't acknowledge that. And so what's really awesome about the creative process is just having the opportunity as a performer, as a creative, as a contributor, to allow yourself, give yourself permission to surrender to something else that's going on. In this case, that something else is this collaborative, collective consciousness, this vested interest that everyone is keen in with the group, kind of what Nicole was talking about before, and just trusting the home here, trusting that any changes will make us more comfortable in this home, in this dwelling, in this house of matter, and this is what matters.
Okay.
Yes. So is there one house, or is it a neighborhood?
This is a womb-niverse. So we're not just talking about on the planet. We're talking about our house in this Milky Way. We're talking about our house as the Milky Way in a greater unit. We're talking about so many, like the biblical reference in my father's house, there are many mansions there. This is what we're talking about. Moving through these zodiacs as houses. Oh, so many houses. We're dwelling in so many different places simultaneously. Mm-hmm. At least this is my take on it.
Oh,
mm-hmm.
Interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, the part of my process in, you know, bringing this work into fruition since 2011, for my MFA thesis, I did a book called House of Matter. It's a book of poems. And each poem is a room within a woman's body. So the actual house is physically a woman for this book. And the names, you know, House of Violent Prayers, House of Dismissal Furniture, House of Implicit Memory, the House is Homesick, House of the Ninth Octave, House of Crosses. And there, it's a little bit inspired by in voguing culture, there's the house is always the nucleus is the mother, which in voguing culture sometimes is a man who identifies as a woman or a man who identifies as a man, but it is that's the terminology, house of, I'm not sure if you're familiar, Paris is Burning is a beautiful documentary. And we do, we
Nicole,
work with wax.
Nicole, wait a second. And you said, I'm not catching the words, in what culture, in what film?
Oh, excuse me.
Did you say it again?
Voguing.
Spell it for me.
Voguing.
Okay, yeah, no voguing. Okay, and then the film you mentioned?
The documentary.
Which one?
Oh, Paris is Burning.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, of course. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So we work a lot with the style or the dance form whacking, and both of these forms were born from gay men of color communities. And this idea of basically that it's a mother, whether it's a mother who identifies as a woman or a man, it's what is that mother, like the womb-iverse, the when I chose the title House of Matter, matter, material, matriarch, mother, all have the same root to that word. So it's kind of matter disguised as a woman. The ideology and the values of, I think, the company, the consciousness of the company is very woman-centric. And I'm interested in, like what Sabela said, really finding those questions that make space for both men and women to be telling these stories while honoring the feminine within us all. So it's not necessarily pushing men out of the conversation, but how can we bring them in without, you know, these are, the conversations surrounding gender identity can be very triggering, very challenging, and I find I'm constantly riding my edge in this, and so that's why I like to use something that's a little bit more interpretive, House of Matter, where you know, it's Valerie's voice and her presence within this work. She really embodies, like, the mother of this house. And we continue to come back to that with a song that she wrote, Mother is Crying. And her character is kind of in a playful way reminding us that, like, really it's the mom who's holding it down right now and who's not really getting the credit she deserves, and how this is, this is true, whether it's in, I mean, this is how I understand it in my own household that I was raised, but also in this collective household of, you know, our system as a whole. Why do we wear high-heel shoes? Is that designed to throw us off balance? Or why is mom not getting, you know, working so hard, and she's holding it down, and she's being the mom and the dad right now? And so it's very much about trying to give praise and reverence to the feminine power that lives within all of us, and at the same time paying homage to the mother, you know, the mother within this earth, the mother that we came out of. Yeah. And in regards to release, like you said, I just wanted to speak on that real quick, because I think that there are things that perhaps we don't quite ever release. It just kind of changes. Like, perhaps it's not necessarily a healing, but a mending. And when I think of the word release, I think of movement. It's moving out of us. So moving through these different emotional experiences that in a lot of ways, I think, in our culture, we've forgotten how to mourn or to have grief. And it's really sad right now. I mean, like, we're in a climate change crisis, basically, and if we can't access those feelings of terror and deep sadness and sorrow about what we've done to this earth, it's like, how are we going to take action on it? And as an artist, I feel a sense of responsibility to respond to these things within myself, to actually go to those places and actually feel it. And in the feeling, that is the release. Just going there, I think that something does move when we go there. And sometimes it does get stuck. And sometimes it's not always time to go there or to go so deep into one emotion. But I do know that after a good cry, there is definitely a sense of release. Yeah. I don't know if I've answered that question.
Oh, no, this is all really interesting. And as you were speaking about, you know, the matter, the mother, the matriarch, you know, sort of all those M.A.s, I was just wondering where the father is in the story and in the house, because you mentioned, you know, the mother sort of doing all these things. I wonder what happened to the father. Does he exist? Is he in the story? That just was sort of what came up in my mind when you were speaking. And then before you both shared some poetry with us, since people can't see you dancing, you know, on the air. so I have to come to ODC next week. Is it 3 days? Is it the whole weekend? Is it the 13th, 14th, and 15th?
Correct, yes.
Okay, cool, super. I was wondering if you could tell us a little bit about your background, and I was wondering when you mentioned your master's thesis, is it published? I want to read it because you know mm-hmm. we've been talking about my writing something. I'm like, oh, I got to read this because I think we've spoken. I think this might be our third time, and I've mm-hmm. seen your work, you know, quite a few times, and I just love what you do. But now it's like, oh, I can actually write something because I mean I don't know, maybe it's just going deeper and deeper. It's like, oh, yeah. So anyway, so I need to know, like, sort of, you know, your background, you know, sort of, you know, your accolades, you know, your awards. I want you all to talk about that a little bit. So anyway.
Well, it's not published, but I could definitely send you a copy if you'd like to read it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I certainly would. Okay.
And so, Bailey, you want to talk about the father?
I think the father is referenced. So there's a presence of the father in his piece in mm-hmm. several different performers reference father and father figures. So yeah, the father's definitely present in this piece in different ways. yeah, but I mean, you know, this piece highlights I don't think the piece, and I don't want to speak for you, Nicole, but my experience of the piece isn't about creating a sense of 50-50 balance between a representation of the father and mother, but it's really about highlighting the mother. And part of the subtext of that is we're going to highlight a variety of aspects of mother that we really don't acknowledge oftentimes, and of womanhood that we oftentimes just don't acknowledge. And it's okay for the woman, and particularly the mother, to take center stage and be deliberate about it in this process, in this piece. So, yeah, with that being said, the father is present in a variety of different ways. But this piece is about the mother, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm okay with that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. I just want to let you know that I'm going to have to run into work here in about 5 minutes.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, tell us, give us some, like, where did you do your MFA? And, you know, tell us, you give us the details about ODC.
Okay. I did my MFA at California Institute of Integral Studies in their Creative Inquiry and Performing Interdisciplinary Performing Arts Program.
Mm-hmm.
And ODC, that's where the show is, the ODC Theater, 8 p.m., December 13, 14, 15, and they are located in the Mission on 17th and Shotwell.
Okay. All right, and 8 p.m., Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, same time every performance.
Correct, yeah.
Okay, and is there a website for you or for the theater that people can get tickets, or can they get them at the door? What do you suggest? I mean, ODC is not a huge theater, but I know ticket sales in advance help the company to know how well they're doing.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, so you can find it on the website at the ODC events page. I believe that if you just visit ODC
Dance. Oh, I can give it to people. Oh, I have it. Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah, I have it. ODCDance.org events. Yeah. And then you have on the website embodimentproject.org, right?
Correct, yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And
cool.
The tickets are selling really fast, so we do recommend folks to purchase them in advance. But if you get there before, I believe you can buy it at the door as well. And I didn't mention that we have some guest performances. Tracy Barchild, Tracy Bartlow and Star Child Productions.
Oh, really? Oh, she didn't tell me. I just saw Tracy last week.
Yes. Performing on Sunday. Rashad Pridgen and Zakiya Harris.
Oh, really?
Also Naka Dance Theater. That's Jose Navarrete and Debbie Kijama. They're doing an amazing piece. They set on some youth from East Oakland that involves turfing and storytelling. It's called the Anastasio Project and explores Oscar Grant and Anastasio. And additionally, we have Joel Weber, and there's someone I'm missing. So there's some exciting showcases.
So when, every evening there's a different special artist presenting as well? Is that what you're saying?
The Anastasio Project, Naka Dance Theater, they're presenting, this is a site-specific piece, so it's as people are walking in, and it will be in the lobby and kind of spilling out of the theater, and then Zakiya and Rashad, a.k.a. Soul Nubian, will be presenting kind of a pre-show excerpt, and same with Tracy Bartlow. Friday, Saturday, and then Sunday will be Tracy.
Okay, so Soul Nubian, Friday, Saturday. Okay. Yeah, I was trying to get this straight. Oh, so people really should plan for a couple of, they should come see you twice. So really, they really need to get tickets early.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. So so since you've got to run, I guess we're not going to get a poem. We'll have to come see the show, huh?
Yeah, sorry, excerpt.
Okay, yeah, go ahead.
Okay, let's see. If only she didn't get aroused and awoken in the dark. If only she didn't feel her feet transform into a mermaid tail inside the water of a swollen moon. If only she didn't dream in the coded language of her beauty marks, insulated by the supple walls of her pelvic floor. Who will be left standing when she midwives a new vocal cord, the ninth octave of her feminine priest, the sound that infants make during their ninth month of sleep, when her tooth gets released, goes viral and germinates on the beaks of hummingbirds and bumblebees, purging the swallowed screams of the women of Juarez, the girls of Sedan, Baghdad, Tel Aviv, Cape Town, Baltimore, Oakland, the 1 in 4 young girls who got their voices stunted, swallowed, shrunken underneath the same roof that nurtured them, that cultured them, that kept them warm. To the man who tells me he likes my baby voice, would you still like it if you knew how it got that way? Out in there.
Gosh, that was definitely inviting. One wants to hear more, so that was a great piece to close our conversation with, because you said you have to run. So, Bela, I hope you have a few minutes to talk a little bit further.
Yeah,
like
it's really nice. Yes, I want to thank you. Okay.
Oh, thank you, Nicole. Have a great day today.
Okay, great. I appreciate it. Bye.
Okay. Bye, Nikki Klee.
Bye-bye. So, Savela, if you could tell us sort of, you know, give us some of your accolades. I don't have a bio for you, so I wasn't able to introduce you properly. So tell us a little bit about yourself, and then I was wondering if you have a poem for us.
Sure. I'm a Los Angeles-based choreographer, writer, so-called interdisciplinary, multi-hyphenate artist. Mickey and I met when I was finishing up my MFA at UCLA. So I did both undergrad and graduate work at UCLA. And I've been creating work probably for the last 17 years. I'm in theater as a choreographer and also as a composer. So hopefully you'll get a chance. I don't know if David Rousseff's piece is coming, but I composed music for his piece that premieres next month in Maryland. It's called Stardust. And I bring that up because right now my body of work primarily focuses on masculinity, manhood, and maleness.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't take on projects unless someone is exploring those things as a collaborator or in my own work. So this is how House of Matter really fits into the current trajectory of my creative work. And, and I used to work with... another connection for Nicole and I is Rennie Harris Peer Movement. So Rennie is a friend of mine, someone that I met when I lived in Philly. And I came on to a project called Roman Jewels as a writer and composer.
I saw that. That was so wonderful.
Oh,
yeah. I remember it as if I saw it yesterday, and it was a long time ago. That was so beautiful. The writing was phenomenal, and the choreography is just, I love that piece, Roman Jewels.
Wow.
I think that was my introduction to Harris, and then after that, I was like, okay, well, whenever he was around, whenever he was doing anything, I was like so wanting to be there. Oh, so you're Professor G, the funk instructor, a.k.a.
Yeah.
Guru of Groove, a.k.a. the Beacon of Boogie.
all of them AKAs. Over Soul Center. Yeah. So that was when I was living in Philly. I was primarily doing theater at the time and doing music, but working with Pure Movement, I took another path and started really working in dance a little bit more, well, a lot more, actually, because of the success of Roman Jewels. I thought we were just going to present, you know, have a show in Philly and that'd be it, but it turned out to be something different, and we had some really successful, had a very successful national, international tour with that piece.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's pretty life-changing experience.
Yeah, and then when Rennie Harris came to San Francisco for the summer music series, Stern Grove, did you come for that particular residency? Because they were here for a while. Were you here that summer?
No.
Okay.
No. Since I do my own work now, I only get a chance to work with Pure Movement a couple times a year now, but I'm still active with the company, but just not in the same capacity.
Yeah. So Stardust, that you mentioned, that's your work, you said, right? That's getting ready to open.
No, that's from David Rousseff, but I composed the music for it.
Okay, nice.
And did the sound design for it. So, so you know, there's certain things brewing and. I do work under a moniker, Oversoul 7, as a vocalist in basically house and dance music. But yeah, just keeping things in slow motion.
Nice.
Yeah.
Oh, gosh, I hope Stardust comes our way. That'd be great to see that.
Yeah, it's a beautiful, beautiful piece.
Mm-hmm. What's
and I think as far as the conversation, as part of the conversation that Nicole is having in this piece, but the story centers around a character, a young man who is a homosexual young man who, basically speaks to the world via his phone and text message. And, it's such an amazing piece. It's such a heart-wrenching piece. It's such a delightful piece. And so you have my compositions, which are really electronic bass, bass heavy, layered in regards to sonic ideas and samples, and very melodic in juxtaposition with Nat King Cole's music. So if you can imagine maybe some Miami bass or some you know, underground really bass heavy bounce, New Orleans bounce music.
Mm-hmm.
Sharing the same space as Nat King Cole, and you can kind of get a glimpse of what this work is like as the story is told in text and movement, and literally text on a screen with these beautiful visuals by Carrie Ann Chimcham. And it's just a beautiful piece, and he's an amazing choreographer, and the ensemble is like a dream team. So, a lot like House of Matter. House of Matter, the ensemble is... it's a dream team. It's an amazing group of artists, multi-hyphenate artists, like not just dancers, like people, truly interdisciplinary artists who can come at you so many different ways. And, you know, they bring a lot to the work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I see how, you know, you and Nicole are, you know, as artists, you know, so drawn to one another because you are doing really similar work. And then, with the Rennie Harris connection, you know, Pure Movement, I just love the name Pure Movement. It's like, it's just such an affirmation, right? Pure Movement.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, nice, nice. This is great. I'm looking forward to meeting you next week. It's going to really be exciting.
Yay!
Yeah, yeah. So can you share something with us?
Sure, I'll do like a short piece of something that I wrote for the show. In the ways of the seven holy spirits in this cornerless realm, several different roots with the suffix L, I, Ja, serpentine, Faya, chariot of ascension. Mention my name in sweet tongues of prayer and protection, love and directions from the inner. None to nine, divine femininities intertwined. You and I, love, make on eight, create to continue. This womb universe we spin through, all us, we. I can feel the energy, secretions of my spine. Melanine designed for Most High. Maker, creator, I be the makey, so to speak, demonstrator, frequency dressed in flesh, blessed to impress my soul print on records Akashic, agnostic to tongue-tied believers, be the receivers with closed fist or open hand, demand a recall on, you have to come see the piece to hear the rest.
Oh, that's great. Oh, wonderful, wonderful. So why don't you give our audience, you know, your website so they can stay in touch and find out sort of what you're up to, particularly those that are able to travel. Like they can come down to Southern California, which is not far, and maybe they can get to New York.
Mm-hmm.
So why don't you let them know your website. I think it's your name, right?
I think it's Disa Baylor Grimes at .com.
Right. Yo, can you spell it for them?
Yeah, or sure. DSABELAGRIMES.
Mm-hmm.
So you're more than welcome to hit me up on Facebook. And my only caveat is that I'm so into this other world. I'm not online as much doing the Facebook thing, but I definitely will love to communicate with people on Facebook. But if you're looking for an instant response, good luck. and I periodically post things on my website, DisaBellyGrimes.com. And you can also Google or look for me at OVASOUL, the number 7, Oversoul 7. There's several ways to contact me, and I'd be happy to touch base with anyone that wants to talk about some good things.
Yeah, yeah, and definitely don't want to miss you when you come up here in person.
Please
on the 13th, 14th,
please
and 15th
don't.
At
yes.
ODC. That's going to be special.
Yeah,
really special.
House Matter, 8 p.m. ODC, 13th, 14th, 15th.
Yeah, it's going to be really
come
awesome.
Come
Yeah. Well, safe travels. And I want to ask you, if you send me some music, Nicole can give you the contact information because I don't have yours. I'll play something on the radio show Friday to remind people to come out.
Sounds good.
Okay, cool. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you very much. Have a blessed day, all right?
You too. It's been good talking to you.
You as well.
Okay, peace and blessings.
Bye-bye.
Bye. So we're going to close out with the Gina Breedlove piece that Nicole said that she is on. And I remember when we had Gina on when she had the CD release party. Gosh, I guess it was last year. Maybe it was earlier this year. I'm trying to remember. It might have been earlier this year. we're going to play Cover Me for 1 Billion Rising. Here we go. And don't forget to join us for another edition of Wanda's Picks on Friday morning at 8 o'clock Pacific time.
There's a little girl inside me, and she's crying from the pain of a past she can't remember. In a place she cannot name, there's a little girl who struggles, trying hard to understand how her innocence was stolen at the mercy of his hands. This memory outlives you, so I'm trying to forgive you on my own. But I'm not
beneath the stairway space.